We need at our table of awareness the logician, but equally we need the intuitive, we need the mystic.
I almost died.
I was allowed to go to the very precipice of death, of life and death, and look over the edge. And I was allowed to behold what was there and allowed to come back. Most people aren't.
When we talk about being aligned with ourself or being aligned with our soul or hearing our higher self, that's really what we're talking about, is being connected to that divine part of ourself, that light-filled part of us that is connected to God energy, that is connected to everybody here and every experience we've ever had.
More doctors, more professionals can open up to use intuitive gifts in their work. That's really important.
Hi, I'm Dr. Amy Robbins, and welcome to Life, Death, and the Space Between. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and medium, and here we explore life, death, mediumship, near-death experiences, consciousness, and what it all means.
Brace the rudder! Raise the sails! Raise the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
You may want to consider shopping through Instacart this winter if you like watching snow more than walking in it, celebrate soup season, or own several pairs of fuzzy socks. Because staying home means staying warm, and some days just scream delivery. So this season, get everything you need right from the comfort of your robe. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees, exclusions, and terms apply. They say opposites attract. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is the best bed for couples. You can each choose what's right for you whenever you like. You like a bed that feels firm, but they want soft? Sleep Number does that. You want to sleep cooler while they like to feel warm? Sleep Number does that too. Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed? So you can choose your ideal comfort on either side. And now save 40% on the new Sleep Number Special Edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. See store or sleepnumber.com for details.
I have to be honest, I was a little bit skeptical when I got this pitch for the podcast, but I was also very curious. And part of the reason I was skeptical was because, I don't know, it seemed a little bit shocking to me that someone could claim to have channeled Nikola Tesla and Albert Einstein and John McCain and so many other amazing thinkers of our time. And yet I was curious. And so here I bring you an episode with John Thomas, who he and his wife have been working with a channeler to collect this information about climate change and what those on the other side, some of those brilliant souls, are thinking about what's happening in our planet now. Now, I know you might be thinking right now, this is not even to be believed. I'm not buying this. I just invite you to be curious, to lean in, and to think about if this is at all possible. So with that, I bring you today's interview with John Thomas. Welcome, John, to Life, Death, and the Space Between.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So we are going to have quite an interesting conversation today. You work with your wife and a channeler, Sam, who channels many, many well-known spirits, people who were well-known humans that are now on the other side. Can you tell us, can you just kind of give us the background here as to how this unfolded for you, someone who is not coming at anything from a very spiritual background originally, but how did this process happen?
So the short story here is that my wife, Carolyn Thomas, she's the inspiration for this book, and she was friends with Sam Larkin, who is the channeler. Now, Sam is not a professional channeler, but Sam, in her early years, childhood and growing up, she knew she had some skills. She had animal intuitive skills. She could see things when animals were in distress that no one around her could see. But, you know, and so she would occasionally help people that had problems with animals. And this is how Carolyn actually met her. We're having some problems with the cats in our house. And so through a friend, she got together with Sam, and they did some work telepathically with the animals, and it really helped. And later, they became friends. And then at one point, Sam told Carolyn, I'm getting high vibration messages. I don't know from who or from where, but they're for you. This I know for a fact, they're for you. And so those two got together on a channeling session, and what came through Sam for Carolyn was someone that we will call Baba. It was an entity on the other side, and they were ended up being able to have conversations. And what's interesting about the way Sam channels is she is what we would call a voice channeler. Typical channeling, you might tell the channeler, I want to connect with this soul, ask these questions. The channeler will ask the questions and then relay the information back to you. Now, we're not channeling experts here, but we know this is intuitive channeling. But what Sam does is voice channeling. And in this case, the soul actually comes in and takes over Sam's vocal cords, essentially takes over Sam's persona. And you can end up having direct conversations. Carolyn could have direct conversations with Sam through actually to the soul. And it was a dialogue back and forth with no intervention at all from Sam. And in fact, after these sessions, Sam would really recall nothing of the interview. We would tell her what happened on the interview. But what was remarkable is when the souls would come in, for instance, John Muir, when he came in, and all of a sudden we started hearing the Scottish accent out of Sam. Sam lives in California. She has no accent unless you call us out here in California. We have some sort of accent. And then Nikola Tesla, it would be a very Eastern European. It was fascinating. And some of these audio excerpts are actually on our website at channelmessagesofhope.com. But we also have an audio book that's about to come out that will be the actual recordings of the souls, because we would do these via Zoom session. Sam was an hour away from us. But the short story of how it came about is once this entity, Baba, had come through, who had done the high vibration messages to Sam for Carolyn, and then they realized they could talk to Baba, who was on this council that we call it the council, ascended masters on the other side who have some elevated level of, I don't know what we call it, responsibility or influence on the other side. But then they discovered they could bring in other souls. And so they had certain conversations with people like David Bowie and some others not in the book. And then Carolyn had an inspiration, and she thought, if I can have conversations with these souls in this way, I could bring in whatever the appropriate soul was, and I could create messages of hope, because she was greatly, you know, concerned about what's going on in our world. It's not just environment, and we're a divided country. There's wars everywhere. We have famine. We have all these things. And so she started thinking, like, this could be a really interesting idea, and she wanted to talk to Bob about that. So when Sam, then they did a session, and Sam brought in Baba, and Baba said, well, by the way, that is not your idea. That is an idea from the council. Your inspiration was actually given to you by the council. And what we want you to focus on in this theme is the environment, because the earth is very upset right now and having a lot of trouble. And so we want you to concentrate on the environment. And that's really how the whole thing started.
So, okay, so Baba is maybe the speaker for this entity called the council, because I've heard other people also say they have channeled the council. And my question is everybody's council the same group of light beings? Do we know that? Like, how does this kind of work itself out here?
So what we have put together, and, you know, we're not the spiritual experts down here. We're spiritually open and spiritually curious. But what we have surmised is the council being a group of ascended masters, and we believe entities like St. Francis and Jesus Christ are on this council. So what we've been able to pick up through our soul conversations is there's not just one voice from the council. The council is a group, as it were. Baba is a member of that council. Baba became a primary contact for Carolyn. They had a special relationship in this regard. Now, we also talked with St. Francis. St. Francis is in the book. But that's kind of what we put together on this thing called the Council, the group of ascended masters, probably not coming back in a lifetime, probably assuredly not coming back, but have great influence and in certain lifetimes that they had. And we've come to realize that these souls have had many lifetimes, and there is one when they get to the end, and they're not going to come back in a lifetime. They have fully ascended, and we believe that the Council is a group of fully ascended masters. That's the best we can put together.
So when you say, like, Jesus Christ is on this council, maybe someone like, I don't know, Mother Teresa or something, does that mean that, because I've also heard people saying that they channel Christ consciousness, or they've been able to channel Jesus. Does that mean that Jesus only exists on this council, or that Jesus also exists as its own entity to channel?
Again, this is what we've been able to put together. I believe that the souls on the other side, they are energetic beings. And there's the soul, and then there's the lifetime that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus Christ is available that lifetime. In my estimation, he is available to be channeled directly. What we saw is that the council was working together. It's a group that works together, but it's a group of individual souls. So they are independent in a sense and available. So if St. Francis is on the council, which we fully believe, and we would ask these souls, and they were somewhat cagey about revealing too much, but we could converse with St. Francis directly. We can converse with Baba directly. And we know that this council, this group of these souls did have a particular work together and appeared to set some policy. And one of the policies they set was, we want Carolyn to work on this book, and we want her to work on it on behalf of the environment.
So it kind of sounds to me like a board, like a school board.
Kind of sounds like, yeah.
That's what I'm envisioning.
In the context.
Like, you can talk to all of us. Maybe one of us will answer. Maybe we won't, because we're all here together.
I mean, we have our human understanding of how things work.
Right.
I mean, I work in tech and stuff. And so, yeah, I would think of it as a board as well. Honestly, that's the first thought that I had.
And then each individual energy, I guess, on that board could be addressed or could be channeled.
Correct.
If.
That is correct. That's our understanding as well.
Okay, so how did it come that many of the souls that you channeled, was that, because I've never interviewed anybody who's so specific about the specific souls in which they've channeled. Like, it is, you say very clearly, like, this conversation was with John McCain. This conversation was with Tesla. This conversation was with Albert Einstein. One, how does Sam know that to be the case, or you, or Carolyn? Was there anything in the channeling that you were then able to look at and get validation, like, oh, there's no way anybody else would have known this except that person? I mean, I've been pretty deep down this hole, and I'm like, kind of skeptical, I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, I was too, you know. Like I said, we're not professional channelers here, nor was Sam. She just has the skill. So we talked to all of these souls, okay, and not just about the environment. We talked about what they were doing on the other side, how they work with people on Earth, but we also talked to them about their life progression. So this is my interpretation of how it is. There is a soul, and there's a piece of that soul that is from Source, and we have many lifetimes. A soul will have many lifetimes. We asked Maleva Einstein, how many lifetimes have you had? She said 122. Okay. And so the lifetime is meant to work on things while you're here on earth, lessons you can learn, experiences that you might contract to have. And so we would, like, for example, let's take Mileva Einstein. When we were talking to her, she was already in a body on a next lifetime on earth.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask. So yes, keep going. I'm just taking notes as you're talking too.
So we're talking to the persona, in a sense, of that particular lifetime that was of our interest, connected to that soul. So, you know, Mileva had a son, Edward, who had schizophrenia when she was married to Albert Einstein. And so she had to basically spend her whole life taking care of Edward. It ruined her financially. She also really didn't get much respect for her technical contributions of what she did helping Albert. Albert asked us to talk to the soul of Mileva Einstein. But when we're talking to her and we asked her about her successive lives, she said, I am now a psychotherapist. You can call me David, working in India with mentally challenged people. Her contract in her next lifetime was to work with people like her son that had serious, you know, mental challenges. And so that's the lifetime she came back in. Others we talked to said, no, I don't have any. Samuel Clemens said, I don't have any lifetimes left. I'm graduated, as he put it. But back to your question, how do you really know? We asked a lot of very specific questions of these souls. Like, for instance, we were talking to Tesla, talking about Tesla papers. We're talking about certain inventions he worked on. I got involved in this book when Carolyn determined she was going to be talking to some highly technical people around the topic. And my background is tech. I work in high tech here in the Valley. And she thought maybe, you know, I might be a good interviewer to work with on these people. So, you know, the kind of information that would come through was oftentimes so very specific that I, you know, because I kept asking myself the same question, and I came to the conclusion that, I mean, if you read through the book and you read the kind of detail that comes through, you know, I truly believe that we were talking to that lifetime, that particular lifetime. That doesn't mean that's their only lifetime. And it also means that if we had any evidence that there was a different lifetime for one of these souls, we could have accessed that too, but we have no way to know. It's not like we were given a list. Here's what I did in all my lifetimes. But I will tell you something pretty interesting. John Muir, we asked him about, well, are you in a body right now? And he said, I am in a body, in an adolescent, a young man who's a snowboarder in Alberta, Canada, and he lives near a place called Pato Lake. And we're like, Pato Lake? We never heard of any of this stuff. Sure enough, we look up, and he described how Pato Lake looked. And sure enough, we got online, looked at it, looked at where it was located. And, I mean, you know, it was exactly as he described. So, you know, there's no way for us really to make up stuff like that, honestly, I don't think. And, you know, Sam, the channeler, she had no real knowledge of these different lives that we were talking to. She didn't have any information. In fact, Carolyn would do a lot of research before an interview was going to happen. She'd read books multiple weeks to assemble the framework of the questions we wanted to ask. We would tell Sam maybe the day before, looks like we're going to want to talk to Theodore Roosevelt. Here's a picture of Theodore Roosevelt. Sam's not a historian. She doesn't know much about that. And so, you know, then she would invoke Theodore Roosevelt, and we had a particular way that we ran these sessions, and then we would have the conversation. And what Sam does recall is how the soul looked when it came to her body. And in the case of Theodore Roosevelt, she said, he rode in on Cleo. Where Cleo? Well, one of his first horse, favorite horse was Cleopatra. And he was a real big personality. They didn't all come in like that. But so, you know, we're not here to try to convince people of the authenticity of all this. If you're spiritually open, spiritually aware, and there's so much in the book talking about what they did in their lifetimes, what they're doing on the other side, who they're collaborating with, what they're working on, I think it's quite compelling. But I think if you're spiritually aware, spiritually curious, you have concern about where this environment is going, you're worried about your own kids. Actually, I came to the conclusion, that I was thinking about what can I do with this environment, because I'll probably come back in a lifetime. What am I going to come back to? Makes me want to be more responsible in this lifetime. Mm-hmm.
Well, that certainly does shift things, right? If the perspective is, I think we should be taking care of the planet and each other just for the sake of this lifetime. But if you are going to come back, to your point, what are you coming back to? And how does that shift and change maybe how you interact with this Earth at this point? Can I ask, how did you determine who was going to come through and speak on this? Or was this determined by Baba and the council who said, okay, today you're going to speak with John McCain, for example?
No, they did not dictate anyone that we would talk to. They just wanted messages of hope to go out around what is going on with the environment. So Carolyn initially created a small list. And you'll notice on the table of contents, the 19 we talked to, there's a range. We go from, you could say politicians, we call them policymakers. How would they deal with this? We have conservationists and preservationists like the John Muirs of the world, Jacques Cousteau. Then we go over to spiritual leaders like Wayne Dyer and St. Francis. And oftentimes, it was a short list to start, but we would always ask the soul at the end, who else should we be talking to on this topic? And like, for instance, Charles Keeling, he was the first one that discovered there was a link to the greenhouse gas concentrations in the air and how it affects global warming. He said, you got to talk to Jacques Cousteau. He said, oh, okay, well, that seems obvious, but he wasn't on the list. Theodore Roosevelt said, I want you to talk to John Muir. Theodore Roosevelt he really established our national park system under a lot of influence from John Muir. Like I mentioned, Albert Einstein wanted us to talk to Maleva. Well, John Muir said, you should really be talking to St. Francis and Wayne Dyer. Wayne Dyer was already on the list. St. Francis was not necessarily. So
these people did not necessarily live in simultaneous time here.
Correct. Correct. But what we see is they all have a perspective and an observation of what's going on now, probably energetically. And if you go all the way over to the spiritual leaders like the Wayne Dyers and St. Francis, what we learn is that, St. Francis would teach us that we are all one. We are all connected, not just people to people, people to animals, to plants, to Mother Earth itself, to the oceans. These are all energetic souls, and we're all connected. And the guidance from the spiritual leaders are, if you are all connected, then you're going to have a respect of all the things that you're connected to, maybe different than man elevating himself higher than everything else, and I can abuse the earth and it won't really matter, but it does matter. And when the earth is angry, when the soul of the earth is angry, you're going to get, responses in some of the things we're seeing, which are extremes and certain weather patterns and things like that. But John Muir said something very interesting. He said, if you would just treat this environment like a church and treat it with that level of respect, it's a lot about the approach that we have in how we deal in the world around us. And if we understand we're connected to everything, like I can look out my window here and I see trees and I see grass in a park. I see people playing there. I see squirrels in the neighborhood. Knowing we're all connected in that way makes me want to have respect for all the things that I'm connected to. And I do believe that that's a very powerful perspective and maybe lesson coming out of all of the soul interviews, in my opinion.
So I actually, interestingly, have had one or two people who are very, very concerned about climate change from the spiritual, looking at it from the spiritual perspective. So in doing all of this research and working with these souls, what do you feel like is the sort of cohesive message in terms of what are we doing to our planet Are we going to destroy our planet? What can be done to stop it? Because it seems like there's not yet that kind of groundswell of support for the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can go all the way to the other side to the climate deniers mm-hmm. that will say, oh, there's nothing going on. It's just weather. We have a response.
Right, weather
well.
Cycles, you know, we're just in a bad cycle of bad weather, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And so if you, Wayne Dyer, like let's take it to the high level. He would say that the Earth feels angry, that this is a reflection of man today in the way that man treats each other. Mm. You know, people are very divided. People are angry. And in a sense, if we don't treat the Earth well, you know, the Earth is angry also. So,
well, if you believe in the collective consciousness and the general vibration, yeah. right? Like it's.
You may want to consider shopping through Instacart this winter if you like watching snow more than walking in it, celebrate soup season, or own several pairs of fuzzy socks. Because staying home means staying warm, and some days just scream delivery. So this season, get everything you need right from the comfort of your robe. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees, exclusions, and terms apply.
Worried about what ingredients are hiding in your groceries? Let us take the guesswork out. We're Thrive Market, the online grocery store with the highest quality standards in the industry. We restrict 1,000-plus ingredients, so you can trust that you'll only find the best high-quality, organic, and sustainable brands, all free of the junk. With savings up to 30% off and fast carbon-neutral shipping, you get top trusted groceries at your door, and you can stop worrying about what your kids get their hands on. Start shopping at thrivemarket.com/podcast for 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Certainly feels that way. It's been a while since I've talked to you about what I'm up to. I want to first start by thanking so many of my supporters who have supported me on Patreon and in my Circle community. What's so exciting now is we have my new Circle community up and running, where if you want to contribute to supporting the podcast, you can do so at different levels for different values. So head on over to my Circle group. You can actually find the link in the show notes below. And there's opportunities to continue to support the podcast. And I have to say, your support of the podcast is frankly what has kept this podcast going over time. I have been funding the podcast solely by myself. I get a little bit of money in advertising dollars, but not a lot. So anything that you can give, if you have found value in this podcast, and it's not just giving without anything back, I will give back to you. You will be a part of this community with opportunities for discounts and conversations and ask Amy anything. But it's a great opportunity for you to support what hopefully has helped you over the many, many years. Also, there's so many other ways now that you can work with me. I am offering a group course called Live Your Life Backwards, which is finishing its first cohort this winter and has been absolutely incredible. There's retreats coming up. There's workshops. There's one-on-one sessions with me. So many options that we can work together. So make sure you're subscribed to my YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed to my podcast. And make sure you're subscribed to my newsletter, where you will get a free soul wisdom workbook to help you dig deeper into the virtues that you want to be living in this lifetime. We all need so much more spirituality now. We are in a spiritual crisis, and I am giving you so many tools to tap into your own spirituality. So check out, and don't forget to subscribe to Life, Death, and the Space Between so you never miss an episode.
It feels that way to me, mm-hmm. too. And so, you know, not everybody believes in that way. So there's practical things people can do if they care about the environment, and there's kind of emotional, spiritual things people can do if they care. I alluded to the one already about the fact we're all connected and how we, you know, if we have a different reverence, we could start to change the way. I mean, on a super tactical level, like the example I use is, what if for the next 30 days, everybody, I don't care what your spiritual consciousness or awareness is, but if everyone said, if I see a piece of litter, I'm going to pick it up and I will not litter myself. that in and of itself could make a very big difference. Because oftentimes people feel like, what can just me, little me, do? Even if you think about the pandemic, look what happened to some of the dirtiest air in the world over, you know, like Beijing and places like that. It really cleaned up. So what it tells me is that our Earth wants to have a clean environment. The equilibrium is to have a clean environment. But when the Earth is placed in an out of balance condition, the Earth reacts in, we could call it, an angry way. The scientists would say, well, if you, you know, if you increase global warming and the oceans can't absorb, you know, the temperatures at night and all these after effects happen, what it fundamentally means is our practices are taking the Earth out of balance. And I just would like to note, you know, for people that would deny that there's anything going on here, climate deniers, I would offer this, you know, the Earth over time moves in a cycle. It's a cycle that goes from greenhouse type states to ice house type states and back. But that's a very gradual shift. The Earth can stay in balance through that shift because that's a 100,000 year shift. And that's scientifically determined by samples that are taken out of the ice caps where you can see what the air composition was and you can trace it back. What's happened here is that we have put so much heat-trapping gas into the atmosphere in such a short time, basically the industrial age, that, and you need some greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. If you didn't, it would be as cold as space down here and we couldn't sustain life. But there's a balance, there's a proper level, and we skewed that level so high that we're trapping too much heat now. And now the natural ways that the Earth responds to that, which is oceans absorb heat, the ice caps absorb a lot of heat, there's a natural balance there. It's skewing out of balance. And so what we're seeing as a result of that is, you know, the storm patterns, the hurricane patterns are becoming more intense in some parts of the world. Droughts becoming more intense in other parts of the world. We essentially have an out of balance situation and the Earth is reacting because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you have a weekend, maybe you went out a lot, you didn't sleep much, you ate really bad. And then on Monday, you just don't feel very good. You've put your body out of balance. And so we naturally, then we clean up our diet, we get some exercise to bring us back in balance. But what's happening now is the Earth is so far out of balance, it's having trouble recovering. But, you know, the good news is, and this is a Messages of Hope book, it's not a Messages of Despair book, is that there's many technologists and people working on solutions. You see it. Things that will lower the level of carbon going into the atmosphere, things that can deacidify the ocean. The ocean is acidifying because of the much higher levels of CO2 than we can sustain. But anyway, a really good point here too is that the younger generations are really getting this. And a lot of the passion for, you know, environmentally responsible developments that can sustain our population and also take care of the Earth are in progress. Things like nuclear fusion energy, which is 100% clean nuclear. No nuclear, no radioactive materials, no radioactive waste to dispose of. You know, Albert Einstein said it's going to take 25 years at least to get this, but it is being worked on. And so there are many things that are being worked on right now. And if we collectively, as just individuals, have a much higher awareness of our impact on the Earth and we try to clean up those small things that we do, that in and of itself will help. I mean, in my household, we have an electric car. We also have a gas car, though. You know, we have to be practical on that. So I just wanted to get that example out there.
What do you think it was about the environment that felt like needed to come through in this? I mean, there's so many different topics, I think, that could be channeled upon with these experts. Why was this the one that presented itself at this time?
Primarily because Baba, as a member of the council, said this is what the council wanted us to focus on because the Earth was struggling, is how he put it. Because Carolyn had other ideas. She was thinking of topics like forgiveness or overcoming life's challenges, of you know, maybe just getting perspectives in general on spiritual leaders only on the other side. Carolyn had all these ideas, and then Baba came in and focused her down to the environment, because the earth is struggling right now. And so that's why we concentrate, at least in this first book. But, you know, it's not just all environmental in the book. I mean, I think if you read through this, you'll find out some really fascinating things about how life is on the other side, the reincarnation situation, and what happens when you go to the other side? What's the transition like? And then what is your life review process like before maybe another lifetime is considered? There's a lot of really interesting thing. And the souls were very open to reveal details of their own situation in that particular lifetime that we were talking about. They wouldn't reveal everything. Baba and others on the council were not going to reveal exactly. I mean, I couldn't sit there and say, what are the lottery numbers going to be next week? No, you're not going to get that.
Do you know, we are sitting here on Monday, November 4th. I'm not sure when this is going to air, but it's going to be, well, maybe it won't be after we know the winner, but did they tell you who's going to win tomorrow?
No, but I will say that, there's a lot of personality in these souls. John McCain, the Maverick, he revealed some stuff and just said there's certain people very politically active that are going to, quote, get their due, unquote, when at the time that we did the interviews. And certain things happened after that in terms of trials and convictions and things like that. But I think he was a little more of a rarity on that. He was a little more
predictive,
open. I don't know if he went outside of afterlife protocol and giving us some of this, but
has anyone, have you spoken to, or has anyone in his family seen this? Because really, while Dyer is still, he still has family alive that we know of, but
Are you saying anyone in John McCain's family, have they seen this?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I would hope so. We don't have any direct access to, his wife or his daughter. So I don't know. I hope they would, but.
What do you feel like was sort of the most hopeful in this time of kind of strife and difficulty, and feeling like not only is the planet in a state of upheaval from the environmental perspective, but also from the peopling perspective? What do you feel like is sort of the biggest kind of message of hope here, the biggest takeaway for humanity? Because I've always felt like Mother Earth will be fine. Like, she will shake us off if she needs to shake us off. And I think she kind of has been doing that over the last, five or 6 years. So just I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, and what you think is hopeful for us right now.
Well, I will say that Gaylord Nelson, he said, look, the Earth is 5 billion years old. You can't destroy it too fast. So I kind of agree, Amy, with your point of view on that. There's two sides to where I get hope on this. One is back to the younger generations really understanding the impact that we as man have on this earth, and taking direct action across a number of different efforts and inventions, and, an acknowledgement of the value of the oceans, and why having the oceans deacidified, why having reef structures that are vibrant makes such a difference. So I think that the younger generations are understanding that and taking action. That is, hope for me. Okay. But what the spiritual leaders talk about in terms of that man can really make a difference in all this, just in our own perspective and the way we treat those around us with the right level of reverence and the right level of respect, that we have the power to make a big difference. Now, will man do that? Will man take that and take it to heart? I think over time, more and more people will. So it just tells me, it kind of told me there is a roadmap to making this better, and people can make a difference on this, and there are a lot of people working on it. It's not going to be instant. It's not going to be overnight, and we're going to be dealing with, you know, the effects of extreme weather for a while. But, I mean, just the fact that there's this thing called the Paris Accord, just the fact that there's a participated by most of the leading countries of trying to get our global warming number down by 2050 to 1.5°C, you know, that there are there are nations that believe in this and are working on it. Not every person believes in it. There's plenty of climate deniers. We live here in the United States, but we just have to, you know, we can't worry about them. We just have to educate where we can and push forward and do our part. And a lot of people are doing that, which is a message of hope for me.
What does Tesla think of Tesla?
What does Tesla think of Tesla, the company?
Yeah. Did you ask him?
Yeah. Ask him directly. We asked him what he thought of Elon Musk, too. And I will say that Tesla doesn't have a lot of respect for Elon Musk. Mm. Elon Musk is not an inventor. He's an investor.
Mm.
Okay. And Tesla, this is very interesting. Mm. When we talked to him, he said Tesla as a company, they come, you know, their pitch is e-cars and very clean and all that stuff. But Tesla as a company has a much bigger pollution output profile than people generally know. And after this interview, some months after, here in California, there were lawsuits brought by the government against Tesla for exactly this. Toxic leaks around their painting area. You know, there was a downside to how Tesla was doing their business that Nikola Tesla pointed out to us. That's an example of, like, how would he, you know, that's not the kind of information people generally know.
Mm.
But I don't know if it was 6 months later or whatever, and then I saw all this stuff starting to come out about Tesla as a company. So I think he has great respect for the guys that did invent Tesla. There's a couple of inventors, actually, and then Elon came in as an investor on it, but he wasn't part of the invention side of it. So that became very clear.
Who was the soul that you felt like?
You may want to consider shopping through Instacart this winter if you like watching snow more than walking in it, celebrate soup season, or own several pairs of fuzzy socks. Because staying home means staying warm, and some days just scream delivery. So this season, get everything you need right from the comfort of your robe. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees, exclusions, and terms apply.
Brace the rudder! Brace the sails! Brace the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn Ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
The most profound kind of information came through, or the biggest, like, ahas for you?
Yeah. For me, I mean, I lean toward the spiritual leaders because they kind of close the loop in my mind on the We Are One, especially St. Francis, and especially the way Wayne Dyer pointed out, you know, what the earth is a reflection of what how man is treating man. So that perspective was really important for me. It changed, it really changed the way I thought. Now, when you talk to, you know, like the preservationists and conservationists who, you know, really kind of educated about what the younger generations are doing, you know, what the inventions that are in play and the impact they can make, such as nuclear fusion, such as harnessing wind in a way that's safe, you know, for the environment, for the animals and things like that. So that gave me great hope on that. But for me personally, I kind of lean toward, you know, what the spiritual leaders had to say. But I'll tell you, you know, what these souls in these particular lifetimes on Earth, the kind of things they went to and the dedication that they had. I mean, look at what Gandhi went through. Look at Chico Mendes was an advocate for the rainforest in Brazil. We need those rainforests. Why? Because the trees take up CO2 and they release oxygen. That is part of the earth balance.
Mm-hmm.
And all the ranchers were eliminating rainforest, and Chico Mendes, he was killed for his advocacy for that. I mean, people had a lot of really, you know, passion and dedication in their lifetimes around what they did. It was just quite inspiring, actually.
So who's next? What's the book two going to be? Do we have a book two?
We certainly
need more messages of hope, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. Every message of hope is appreciated around here. But I think things like for Carolyn, one of her favorite interviews was with John McCain. And we talked about John McCain and his life as a POW, which was a horrific 6 years he survived in the worst kind of conditions. And yet, you know, he didn't break. And then he came out and dedicated his life to public service. So, you know, inspiring people that overcame significant challenges, how they did it, their mindset to get through it so that they could come out the other side and be productive and have successful lives. That's one option. Forgiveness in general is a very important kind of the root, really, for us all to survive and be harmonious. You know, back to McCain, she asked, hey, when you went to the other side, and did you meet your captors? And he said, yes, I met my captors. And we had that interaction. And yes, I did forgive them for what they did. That was all on the other side. But there's many.
I'm assuming
we're not exactly
that was
sure.
Part of the life review, as I understand.
That was
life
part of the life review. And you could say, you know, what led you to being a POW? I mean, obviously he got captured, but he said, my soul, when we come down on this earth, there's certain experiences that we've determined that we want to have. We may not know them, but John McCain's soul wanted him to have that experience. He's kind of the maverick. And he, as he put it, it's in the book, his soul said, they'll just go for it. And he did. Other souls had different review processes. Like take Ronald Reagan. You know, in his review, he said, when I was on Earth, I never really put forward a very authentic Ronald Reagan. I was always kind of hiding behind things. And when you look at his history, he was an actor and he was a politician. You know, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And he said, in my next lifetime, I want to go back and be really authentic and put out, you know, the true persona.
It's interesting that you say that because I was just listening to a podcast this weekend on the bullshitters of politics, and he was named as, I mean, they all are, frankly, but he was named as one of them. And they just talk about how over time that's, like, evolved to where we are today, but that it's sort of always been there, and they talked about Ronald Reagan and how he used to bullshit his way out of things. And
well, you know, why did we want to talk to Ronald Reagan? The reason is when he was governor of California, he was very pro on environmental issues. Then all of a sudden he's president and he's not moving on the environmental issues. We want to understand that. And I think it comes right, Amy, kind of part and parcel what you just said there. He got in as president. It's like, oh, I have to keep a lot more people happy here. So maybe I'll modify my viewpoint as opposed to, you know, just staying the course. Like a Theodore Roosevelt, nothing changed his mind from I have to keep people happy. I mean, he just jammed stuff through.
So do your friends in your tech job know that you do this on the side?
Very few, very few. I mean, you know, to appreciate what we have here, you have to be spiritually open and spiritually curious. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is. And Wayne Dyer told us, I don't think this is in the book, but he goes, hey, if you write a book for everyone, you're writing a book for no one. So our audience is the kind of audience that will appreciate the souls that we talk to and the nature of the communication. So it's not the global audience. Mm-hmm. So no, I mean, there's a lot of skeptics out there that would just look at this and go, oh yeah, come on.
Right.
You know, but the people that are more, let's say, more evolved, more open, I will say, will really get it. And that is our target audience. And when you look at, you know, the people that have acted as, endorsed, referenced the book, people like James von Prague and others that are very notable, you know, in the space. So we know who our audience is, and we're just, you know, we started this project because we just wanted for those people that have some despair of the environment and are open to the spiritual messaging the way that we're giving it to them. I just want to get this book in front of them.
Right. That's actually where I kind of appreciate it all and where I'm more willing to say, it's certainly more possible than not, is that your mm-hmm. intention behind it is not to, like, bring people into some cult of, you know, environmental soul channeling and charging them gajillions of dollars to listen to these, like, soul channelers and what you're supposed to do. It's really about can you spread this message of hope based on the information you've received.
It's our number one goal. And, you know, I will just tell you this, you know, I have my own career over here. I run a startup company. We're actually making environmentally sustainable equipment for the food industry. It's food tech. You know, I'm not worried about per se making money with this book. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in circulation. Mm-hmm. And so we made a lot of moves that are pro on the circulation mm-hmm. side. And we have, as I mentioned, we're working on an audio book. I think will be done in December that I think is going to be fascinating, where we take the actual interviews in their entirety because we recorded these and we create an audio book.
Yeah.
Out of these. And so I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, that'll be amazing to be able to actually hear how the voices come through. So, John, if people are interested in learning about Channeled Messages of Hope, about the audiobook, which will probably be out by the time this podcast drops, can you tell us where they can find you and where they can find all this information? Mm-hmm.
One way, good way is our website, www.channeledmessagesofhope.com, all one word. We also have a Facebook page. And on the website, you can hear right now some of the audio excerpts. When we do the audio book, it'll be the same souls talking, but the audio is cleaned up in a better way. But you can get a feel for it, you know, from the website. And, you know, through those two mechanisms, of course, we're on Amazon. And, you know, we just hope, you know, we're just trying to reach out to people. And, Amy, we really appreciate that, you know, you're helping us and you're kind of, you know, on the mission in a sense.
Yeah.
And so it's been a great pleasure being able to talk to you about
this. Likewise. And if we can do anything else to improve people's experiences on this planet in this time and space, I'm in for it. So, John, thank you so much. And thank you to Carolyn and Sam and all the souls, I guess, that came through for this book. So,
and all the souls. I'm sure that they're listening now because we were told, John Muir told us, he said, you know, that it's almost like he painted a picture like it's a movie theater and they would watch these interviews. I think he said, quote, it's a hard ticket to get. I guess I'll find out more what that means when I eventually get, you know, to the other side. But I'll tell you what, I'm thinking a lot about one thing. I'll just close this is this whole experience has made me really examine my own life and go, what were the experiences I was put down here to learn? And I'll tell you what, Amy, I see now where I have repeated certain behaviors and gotten certain results I didn't necessarily like. And those results, the consequences became greater when I would commit the mistake, like, let's say, a second or third time. And it just completely hit me. It's like, you were in that particular area, that was a lesson you needed to learn. And it really got me thinking. And so what I would like to do is I would like to make as much progress as I can in this lifetime on those lessons that at least I can recognize. I'm sure I'm not seeing all of them. But you know, I've gone to enough spiritual counselors and stuff and kind of had them pointed out over time. It's like, oh, now I'm getting
it. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I'm teaching a course, my online course right now, and this is one of the big things we focus on is looking at like past life, soul contracts, and lessons in this life that repeat themselves to think about, okay, what are you, there's something in here that you need to be paying attention to and really looking at it from both the psychological perspective but also the spiritual soul perspective to continue to grow your soul so when you're coming back, you're not coming back working on the same thing over and over again.
I mean, exactly. And I hope you have a lot of people in that class because that is a tremendously powerful perspective.
Yeah.
If you can take it. You know, you get people, it's like, I don't know why this is happening over and over. I get into this bad relationship. It's the same thing. And, well, there's a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lesson there.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's hope I can identify as many as possible so I don't have to repeat. I want all new experiences, great experiences.
I know, me too. Lots of chocolate.
It's not always how it works.
And sunsets, I think. Lots of chocolate and sunsets.
There we go.
Well, John, thank you so much. This was just such an interesting conversation. And I'm just grateful that you're willing to take this risk and put this information out there because it's very, very interesting, and you know, I was a little bit skeptical in coming on and talking with you today, even though I'm pretty well trenched in all of this. But it definitely shifted things for me. So I appreciate you taking that time today.
Oh well, we're putting it out there. You know, my personal philosophy is fearless, not reckless. I put it out there, and I put it out there with all of the, you know, the corroboration. People can make their own decisions, but you know, we just want those people spiritually open, curious, care about the environment. I think there's something in it for them.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Amy.
Like what you heard today and want to hear more? Wondering what comes next and what it all means? Head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts and hit subscribe. Also, if you could take a minute to rate and review my podcast, I would really appreciate it. Stay tuned as we continue to explore life, death, and the space between.
Welcome, friends, to the Playful Scratch from the California Lottery. We've got a special guest today, the Scratcher Scratch Master himself, Juan. Juan, you've mastered 713 playful ways to scratch. Impressive. How'd you do it?
Well, I began with a coin, then tried a guitar pick. I even used a cactus once. I can scratch with anything, even this mic right here. See? See?
Well, there you have it. Scratchers are fun no matter how you scratch. Scratchers from the California Lottery. A little play can make your day. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player claim.
Brace the rudder! Brace the sails! Brace the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
With so many options, why choose Arizona State University?
For me, the only online option was ASU because of the quality. Their faculty was really involved with their students and care about your personal journey. The dedication to my personal development from my professors, that's been extremely valuable to me.
Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online, that's a degree better. Explore more than 300 undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.